Welcome to the Bill Bennett Show. We try to have thoughtful conversation about the news of the day and address the existential threats to America and just generally what's going on. We try to plow deep here, and we sometimes succeed. We do so with your help, so keep your emails coming. Today, we'll catch up with Byron Uhr, columnist at the Washington Examiner and a Fox News contributor. A great discussion with him about Joe Biden and age and Trump and DeSantis and polls, the difference between the legacy media and the American people. But let's welcome Byron Uhr to the show. So, Byron, a lot going on. I'd love to talk about your columns, your long piece, and other pieces about Joe Biden. Also, like to talk about some of these new polls on the Republican side, which are interesting as well. But we'll get to them. But this consensus about Joe Biden is kind of forming fast and hard, isn't it? That he shouldn't run again.
Yeah, you know, as a matter of fact, as you well know, the New York Times is the most respected media outlet among Democrats and certainly among Democratic opinion leaders. And they
is
also,
it among independents?
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know either. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, certainly among the people who make broadcasts at CNN and ABC, NBC, yeah. MSNBC, et cetera. And they seem to almost, in the past few days, have laid the foundation for pushing Biden out of the race. Because on Saturday, July 9, they published this story with the headline. It's got a great headline. At 79, Biden is testing the boundaries of age and the presidency. So it's kind of a diplomatic way, testing the boundaries of age, to say he's too old. But the article goes into some length with Biden advisors saying they're worried about Biden's age and they've had to make concessions to Biden's age, like changing the trip to Europe, which was going to be Europe and the Middle East, splitting those in two to not tire Biden out, worried that, you know, he kind of shuffles when he walks and they worry that he's going to trip on a wire. Quote, he stumbles over words during public events and they hold their breath to see if he makes it to the end without a gaffe. And he can lose his train of thought. Well, I'll quote again. His speeches can be flat and listless. He sometimes loses his train of thought, has trouble summoning names, or appears momentarily confused. And it said at the recent summit in Europe, his fellow leaders were kind of protective of him and treated him like a distinguished elderly relative. So obviously, this has all been known for quite a while. I mean, you know,
yeah, Biden, that's correct. That's right.
Biden was born on November 20th, 1942. That fact was well known during the presidential campaign, and that he would turn 80 this year. Well known. And he would be 82 when he finished his term, his first term. Well known. But it's like the New York Times did this, and then they published that on Saturday, and then on Monday morning, or maybe Sunday night, they published the results of this poll. It's just devastating for Biden, that shows that 64% of Democrats want a different nominee in 2024. Just 26% of Democrats want to see Biden be renominated as the Democratic Party nominee. So it's almost as if the New York Times is kind of giving everybody permission to talk about this and perhaps to act on it.
All right. Let's back up on this a little bit, because I've heard you on this on TV and have read your articles.
I'm not a broken record on this thing. I really
I'm not challenging you, but I just let's clarify. First of all, I don't think this was as clear about Biden in the campaign. Do you, during the campaign?
You mean the age issue?
Yes.
I think during the campaign, an observer of Biden, who was at that point 77 years old, I guess, an observer of Biden could see that he had visibly slowed down from his earlier.
Yes, yes.
And I think it was widely thought of that Biden's absolute last chance to run was 2016, when he was the sitting vice president. And Obama was not in favor of that for whatever reason, and instead favored Hillary Clinton for the nomination, which she got. So I think that it was fairly clear. But on the other hand, the reason I wrote my first article about it, Face It, Biden is too old to be president in April of 2019. So that's early, you know, long before any caucus or primary.
You wrote that in 2019.
I did, yes.
Okay. Okay.
And the thing is, I just looked at it and said, you know, Ronald Reagan, you know this better than anybody. Ronald Reagan served two terms ending at age 77 when he left the White House.
Yeah.
And his second term, Reagan's second term, was filled with media speculation that Reagan was senile, which is the word used at the time, and that he was just too old for the job, that he didn't have an attention span, and he didn't know where he was. And it was just all of this media speculation and joking that Reagan was too old. Now, here again, he left the presidency at age 77.
Yeah.
And Biden would begin his term at age 78 and serve till 82.
Okay. Okay.
So I just kind of did the math here. And
All right.
Yeah.
So that was in what? When did you write that? April?
April of 2019.
So that was in the, not in the thick of the campaign. That was really before the campaign.
No, well, the campaign, you know, campaigns really pick up around that time.
But just picking.
Iowa caucus isn't until January or early February of 2020.
Right, but it's early, or very early in the campaign.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
I'm giving you more credit.
Thank you.
Take it. Yeah. But, okay, would you give me this? That, see, I thought during the campaign, in the thick of it in 2020, that he was slow and off his game. But I have to say, I think it's almost a qualitative difference in the last year or so.
Well, because it's the most taxing, demanding job in the world. And there are physical demands to it as well, just in terms of endurance.
Moving around, traveling around the world, right?
Yeah.
And all the damn things you have to do. I mean, I remember, you know, nothing like it, but in the cabinet, I had this, I had that, and this meeting followed by that meeting, and then you got to drop by, and then you got to be nice, and then you got to see this person. It's taxing, you know?
It is.
But he's worse. Would you give me that? He's worse now.
Sure.
By a fair amount than he was during the campaign.
Yes. And I should also say, I mean, I've had a lot of people push back on me at various times on this, saying that, well, you know, there are people who live really active, sharp, productive lives in their 80s. And I say that is absolutely true. We're talking about one particular specific person.
Okay. Well, since you brought it up, I was going to bring it up later. Can you give me somebody who's that age, Biden's age, who's it's much more encouraging? Not to say they could do the job, but it looks like they could. I'm thinking of Eisenhower, and he was much younger.
Well, actually, Eisenhower is interesting. You mentioned that.
Go ahead.
Eisenhower, before Reagan, Eisenhower was the only president to turn 70 in office.
Right.
And he turned 70 in his last few months in office. So, he left office at 70, but he all of his presidency was in his 60s.
Right. But 70 was older then. I mean, you and I are discounting the medical side here, right?
Right.
So
right.
70 was older. But of Eisenhower, I love the thing I put in my book. He was people said him, he's old, but he moves young. He moves young.
Well, the thing is,
you couldn't say that of Biden in any way.
Can't. But I think the other thing to think about, though, and I wrote about this in that 2019 article, is just the risk. It's like he seems fine now. I mean, like Bernie Sanders seems really fine, and he's a year older than Biden.
Good. Yes.
But you're betting for 4 years. Now, what has really, really taken hold among Democrats right now is they can see this visible aging process that you've been talking about. They can see that happening in front of their eyes. And they've already factored in the fact that Biden is going to be president until he's 82. That's just a fact. Now they're thinking, do we want to make him president till he's 86? Which is completely terra incognita in American politics, just never, ever happened. And I think they're very concerned about that.
All right. Now let me tell you, not that I was prescient like you were, but in the last 2 years, I mean, I have to tell you, New York Times and others saying, my gosh, people don't think you should run. Of course not. I mean, are we kidding? Look at the guy.
Yeah, right.
I mean, my question is he going to finish?
Well, that is not.
He's not halfway through.
No, he's not.
There are a lot of days when he looks to be really, really in bad shape. So I wonder, you know, I hadn't heard that. What was that quote again from you about the meeting in Europe that they treated him like a...
A distinguished elderly relative.
Right. Right, but not, you know, sort of to be indulged, but not taken fully seriously.
Yeah, well,
isn't that what it means?
Charge.
Isn't that what it means? Huh?
Not the guy who's in charge.
Yeah, okay, right, right. Yeah, the most powerful nation.
So I wanted to ask you, it's kind of a question about opportunism, but I've never spoken to you about David Gergen. I feel you must know him over the
years. Of course
years.
I do, very well.
But you know, he has kind of emerged as a spokesperson
for someone 80.
They're telling him Biden is too old.
I'll do you one better. Bob Gates, right?
Yeah.
Bob Gates kind of famously said, I won't get the words right. You'll probably remember better than I. He said, when you get in your mid, late 60s, you start to lose some. 60s.
Yes.
And he said this very recently. Do I have this about right?
Yes, you do. And Gates, of course, is famous for having said, completely apart from the age issue.
Yeah, yeah.
Biden had been wrong about
everything. Yeah.
National security issue over the last zillion years.
Yeah.
Also, just anecdotally, I have talked to people, they're all men, who were quite accomplished, retired. And they, you know, they were the CEO of something or they were a top something or the other. And I asked them if they would be ready to take on the most challenging, demanding job of their life at age 80. And they just laughed at it. I mean, of course not.
Yeah.
So it's just okay. Obvious.
All right. Let's dispense with that. Cause I do think it's obvious. I think quite apart from polls and all that, maybe he'll run. What the hell? Who knows? But it won't last long because he'll be crushed.
Let's say one more thing about this. This is not specifically.
Yes. Yes.
Biden has apparently, look, he knows this problem. He's apparently talked himself into running again by saying that he is the only person who can defeat Donald Trump, that the country, the future hangs in the balance. And Joe Biden is the only man standing between us and the Trumpian abyss. And I think that is going to be his argument to people. And so in part, that argument, whether Democrats would overcome their misgivings about his age, kind of depends on who's running on the other side as well.
I don't think the polls would change much among Democrats if you posed it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Assume Trump's the candidate for the Republicans. How do you feel now about Biden? I think he'd pick up a few points, but not much.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be his
argument.
That is the argument that's won the day inside Joe Biden's mind. I don't know if it will win the day in the Democratic Party.
I don't think so. I want to get to Republicans, but you and I did a podcast a couple of months ago, and let's assume that he doesn't run, let's assume he doesn't run. You know, Jill talks about it, but somebody talks about it. So who's the candidate? And at that time, correct me if I'm wrong, you said it's going to be pretty hard for the Democrats not to nominate Kamala.
I said exactly that.
You still believe it?
Absolutely. First of all, there's no big dominant figure in the Democratic Party that everybody would just assume it's going to be them. There isn't that person. And for two reasons. First of all, the vice president is the obvious successor. I mean, it's the constitutional successor if the president were to die or leave office somehow early. So it's the obvious successor to the president. And in this case, Kamala Harris is the first woman vice president of color. And in the Democratic Party,
yeah.
I mean, who is going to stand up and say, let's kick out the first woman vice president of color? I think that's going to be really hard to do in the Democratic Party.
Despite the fact that an awful lot of people, if they on the Republican and independent side, and I'm sure some on the Democrat side, if they told the truth, would say she's a joke.
Well, yeah, I mean, you just can't stand up inside the Democratic Party and say she's a joke. She polls poorly and nobody likes her. and she'd be a bad candidate, because she already was a bad candidate in 2020.
Yeah, she was eliminated early, right?
I mean, you can say all of that, but the fact is she's the vice president of the United States. And I think that something like that would really have to have the blessing of a lot of leaders in the Democratic Party, women and women of color in the Democratic Party. I just don't see that happening.
I just keep thinking about, excuse the reference to Book of Mind called the Book of Virtues, but I just keep thinking of the Emperor's New Clothes, you know?
Yeah.
You remember the story. Boy, the Emperor looks great. He was walking around naked because he was told that only the best, the finest people could see the raiment he was wearing, till some kid says, what's wrong with the Emperor? I mean, you know, she's a joke. Everybody knows she's a joke, but you got to act as if she isn't a joke if you're a Democrat, because she's a black woman. Is that it?
Well, because she's the vice president of the United States. I mean, that's it. Now,
yeah.
There it is.
Okay. So let me put you in the spot here. So if Biden doesn't run, will you say that you think it's very likely Kamala will be the candidate, the nominee?
Yes, I do, because I think you can have Pete Buttigieg send out signals. You could have Amy Klobuchar send out signals, or you can have people send out signals about various governors. But the vice president hurdle is too high, in my view.
Okay. I'm sorry. Why am I laughing? Emperor's New Clothes. Okay.
I want to let you know about our friends at Bank on Yourself. Have you been dreading looking at your 401k or your IRA account balance? Yeah, things aren't looking really good right now, and you're not alone. And the experts say there has been no place to hide, but that is simply not true. The truth is, you can build a financial bunker that grows and protects your money during even the scariest economic times. The Bank on Yourself Retirement Plan alternative lets you escape the financial carnage that has never had a losing year in over 160 years. Whether you have been investing for years or just started out, now is the time to bypass Wall Street and bank on yourself. Bank on Yourself lets you reach your financial goals and dreams without taking any unnecessary risks. You get guaranteed predictable growth and retirement income with no luck, skill, or guesswork needed. This strategy also lets you take a tax-free retirement income, which protects you from the coming tax tsunami. Unlike the government-controlled 401k, IRA, or similar plan, you control the money in your plan, not the government. You can use your money for any purpose with no questions asked without interrupting the growth of your savings. This is the strategy famous businesses like McDonald's have used when no banker would lend them a dime, and almost anyone can do it. No volatility. Your plan doesn't go backward when the markets tumble. Both your principal and growth are protected. Peace of mind, perhaps the best reason of all. You'll know the minimum guaranteed value of your plan on the day you plan to tap into it, and at every point along the way. You can get a free report with all the details of how adding Bank on Yourself to your financial plan can help you take back control of your money. Just go to bankonyourself.com/bill. That's bankonyourself.com/bill. This information is for educational purposes only and is not a solicitation for the purchase of any financial product. All guarantees are based on the claims paying ability of the insurer.
Let's talk Republican side. Now, do we make anything about the DeSantis increase? I think it was the New York Times poll had Trump at 44, DeSantis something like 25.
Yeah, this new poll that we talked about, the New York Times Siena College poll, that we talked about, it was being devastating for Biden. The flip side of it is what it found out about Trump. And it's not like a huge poll. It's only 350 respondents. But it asked if the presidential primary today were held today, Republican presidential primary, and this is just among Republicans, who would you vote for? And Trump was below 50%. He was 49%. And DeSantis was 25.
Good.
And the others, Cruz, Pence, and Haley were 7% or 6%. And so that's a striking decline for Trump and a striking increase for DeSantis. So, right. Yeah. So I think that, you know, we've seen a lot of polls that showed roughly 2/3 of Republicans wanted Trump to run. And, you know, Democrats and certainly media people are going to tell themselves it's all because of the January 6th hearings. But one thing I've been saying all along is the passage of time affects these things. And Trump's presidency is receding into the past. And I think especially to the degree that when he speaks, he appears kind of still obsessed with the 2020 election.
Did he talk about that in Alaska?
Yeah, he did mention it. As a matter of fact, I'm writing about this right now. The Wisconsin State Supreme Court decision, which made drop boxes illegal, which I think was a really good decision.
Yeah.
And Trump said that the Wisconsin legislature should now reclaim the electors and give them to him,
mm-hmm.
Which is nuts, not going to happen. And I actually talked to there's this group called the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty that filed the lawsuit, conservative group. So they won. And, you know, at the end of the lawsuit, they always seek some sort of relief, right? And they did not seek the relief of overturning the 2020 election. The relief they sought was a declaration from the court that ballots can only be cast in the way specified in Wisconsin law. Mm-hmm. So, and that's what they got. So I said to the head of the group, I said, you know, you didn't ask for the election to be overturned. He said, no, we didn't. And if we had, we wouldn't have won.
Yeah.
So Trump has been talking about that. Yeah.
By the way, just do you think there were some real irregularities in the last presidential election? Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think the next one will be better?
Yes.
More honest? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Look, I think, first of all, the thing about the 2020 election was that it was conducted in a way different than any other election ever because of COVID. And what you saw was like what happened in Wisconsin, which is the Wisconsin Election Commission, their state elections board, just on its own authority, installed 500 drop boxes around the state, unsupervised, unsecured drop boxes.
Yeah.
Like, where did they get the authority to do that? Yeah. Well, they just made it up and everybody went along with it because of COVID. And one of the reasons the Trump campaign lost its post-election challenges is judges said, well, you had the opportunity to challenge these things long before the election and you didn't do it. Now that you've lost, you say they're really bad. So it was there were a lot of changes to the way people voted that I think Republicans have tried to dial back a little bit. And I think there'll be much more scrutiny before the election. So I think that I think it will be better next time around.
OK, let's go to this. I found this very interesting. My son sent me this. It's an article in Newsweek by a union guy who talks about top voters, midterm issues, according to likely voters. Number one, rising gas prices. Number two, inflation. Number three, the economy. Number four, violent crime. Number five, election integrity. Number six, school issues. Then compares that with the U.S. legacy media. The U.S. legacy media poll, has that happened, actually?
I haven't seen that. I'm not sure where they got that. This was a.
Were you in part of the poll? Are you part of the legacy media?
I was definitely not part of the poll. Okay. I can say that.
Well, who are that legacy? Is that the New York Times, the Washington
Post? Yeah, I mean, I would think it would be exactly what some people call the MSM or whatever.
Why do they call it legacy?
Well, because I think there were a number of conservatives. The phrase mainstream media was used all the time. And I think a number of conservatives became kind of unhappy with that, suggesting that conservative views were out of the mainstream, when in fact, in many areas, conservative views were the mainstream. So, okay, if you throw out the phrase mainstream media or MSM, what are you going to use? Corporate media. So legacy media is something that's been used because it does kind of describe the old style TV media, and New York Times and Washington Post corporate media.
All right. Let me repeat so the audience is with us. First four for voters: gas prices, inflation, the economy, violent crime. Top four for legacy media folks: climate change, abortion rights, Ukraine war, Capitol riot investigation.
Yeah.
Now, what I take away from that is they're not only different, they're upside. I mean, they're totally different. They're like two different worlds.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, the first of all, the voters' concerns strikes me as is pretty accurate. I kind of like it. It was obviously an open-ended poll. The first three answers are all the same answer. The first one is rising gas prices. The second one is inflation. The third is the economy. Well, those are all the same, basically. And in most economic fears right now are inflation and the fear of a recession, if there is, in fact, one on the way. And then the last one, the fourth one, violent crime. So that strikes me as a pretty accurate picture of a lot of voters' concerns. Now, I don't know where they got this top legacy media midterm issues. Clearly, if you were just watching TV, cable news, you would think the Capitol riot investigation is their top priority.
Yeah, I turned on CNN the top of the hour yesterday twice, and it was all about January 6th, and they weren't.
Well, I think if you did it right now, it would be all about January 6th.
Okay.
So, and climate change, how much airtime do they devote to climate change? I don't know. I think if you polled legacy media producers and talent, they would probably list climate change high on their list of concerns. Ukraine war, it is a war. It's news. There's no doubt that it's news. So I don't know exactly how this list came out, but I do. The voter list strikes me as very accurate feeling.
Yeah. Okay. So if we discounted legacy media poll, it would be hard to discount if you watched CNN, MSNBC, and read the New York Times, that those are not the major concerns of the powerful.
You know, it's really interesting. Media. I think in the New York Times story, in that poll, they did a top issues question, and I'll look for it as we speak.
Okay.
But it was, the thing that I thought was interesting is the things at the top are the same: the economy, inflation, and crime is up there. But what's interesting is that a number of top Democratic issues, and by that I'm thinking about abortion, even after the Roe decision, and health care, are not really very high. Now, abortion's never been very high on everybody's list. It's a real concern of some single issue voters on both sides. And people have opinions on it, but they rarely put it at the top of their list of national issues. Healthcare, I just thought was interesting because Democrats have kind of always said that healthcare is too expensive and not available enough. And they've always put it high on their issues. And it's not now, which maybe they'll say that's because Obamacare is so wonderful or something. But it's just not. And then climate change is almost never anywhere near, anywhere beyond 1%, maybe 2% of people who say it's their top concern. So a number of the issues that are most energizing, activating to the Democratic base, voters just don't care much about at all.
Since the media is paying a lot of attention to it, however, let me ask you on abortion, in terms of whether that gets people to the polls or single issue. If I conceded that most of the people for whom it's a single issue are opposed to the decision, would it be accurate and fair to say pretty close to that number would be the single issue voters who are pro-life? That is, all the activism is on one side here. And I think even if more of it's on the left, there's a fair amount of it on the right in terms of single issue voting.
Well, I'm not sure. I don't know. When I said it was a single issue, important with single issue people on both sides. By the way, I have found the New York Times top issue question. What do you think is the most is in all caps, important problem facing the country today? Number one is the economy, including jobs and the stock market. And we should mention, you know, that everyone's 401k has suffered terribly in the past 6 months. The economy is 20%. Inflation and the cost of living. So, again, the same answer, 15%. Yep. Now, the state of democracy / political division is 11%. Gun policies is 10%. That is likely to go down until there's another big shooting. Abortion, women's rights, 5%. Democrats, Biden. So your biggest issue is the Democrats and Biden is 3%. Immigration is 2%. Russia war in Ukraine is 2%. Racism is 2%. So you see, some of these issues that get enormous amounts of media coverage are just not viewed by voters as their top issues. Republicans, Trump, 2%, religion, 2%, crime, 1%. So they put crime way down on this list. Healthcare, 1%, education, 1%, foreign policy, 1%, climate change, 1%. So when you ask what's maybe not the most important issue, but the most important problem, the things that people are most concerned about, it's almost all economy.
I'm going to the Republican Governors Association summer meeting, and I've been asked to talk and do my little piece on education and the unions. And I was going to point at Glenn Youngkin in his election and say, you know, boy, this is a huge thing, education, and had something to do with him being elected. And Democrats have pretty much owned this issue. But guys, you can own it now like Glenn did. And it's important. What you're telling me from what you just said, Byron, is people are going to come up and say, nice, Bill, very nice, but doesn't matter.
Well, that's interesting. It's the Siena poll. And it had been my impression that given all of the woke battles of the last several months, that education was a hotter issue than this poll suggests. That's all I can say right now.
Yeah, but the fact that I want it to be doesn't make it so, does it?
Well, that's also true. And when you say what's the biggest problem, people, you know, look, economy 20%, inflation 15%, that's 35% right there, and nothing else is above 10. So,
well, I love the phrase. I think it's Clifford Geertz at Princeton years ago, he's an anthropologist. He said, every anthropologist loves his own tribe, you know?
Yeah.
And that's me. My tribe is education. So I'm going to say, hey, if you're angry about the fact that the legacy media's priorities are, you know, climate change and January 6th, it's because education, because that's what we're turning out of our colleges and our high schools. But again, I would expect the governors to pat me on the head and say, nice, but inflation.
Okay, here I go. I'm gonna say one thing, which is Gallup poll, June of 22, very recent. What do you think is the most important problem facing the country today? Now
this is voters. All voters or voters or it's not legacy media or
let me go to the bottom. It's not legacy media, no.
Okay.
It is a Gallup poll.
Okay.
My guess is this is all Americans, but I can't see all the way to the bottom to see if it's either all Americans or it's registered voters. And that there'd be a couple of points difference if there are. Basically, that what they characterized as economic problems were a total of 40% and non-economic problems were 66%. So there's a little more than 100% here. But of the non-economic problems, and the economic problems were high cost of living, inflation, economy in general, fuel, oil prices, unemployment, federal budget deficit, recession, gap between rich and poor. I mean, it was everything. That's economic. The non-economic problems, the top was the government and poor leadership. That's a good answer, actually.
Yeah.
The second was gun control at 8. Next was crime and violence at 6%. Next was immigration. Next was unifying the country. Next was ethics, moral, religious, family decline. Next was race relations and racism. We're still not there. Next was poverty and hunger. Next was school shootings. Then judicial issues, the courts and laws. Then climate change. That's at 2%. Education, 1%.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I'll be ready for the governors to pat me on the head because you just did. Nice try, Bill. Okay. Yeah. No, I see. Yeah.
Well, it clearly played a role in Glenn Youngkin's election. Yeah. No doubt about that.
Yeah. All right. We got to let you go. You've been very generous. One last question that I think everybody who's been listening has, and I've had for years. Why is it the New York Times Siena poll? How the hell did Siena get it? Why is it the New York Times Harvard or Yale poll?
You know, I just don't know.
I got you. Good. We asked Byron a question he doesn't know the answer to. Please, Claude, make a note of that. Go ahead.
Totally correct. We know Mark Penn has the Harris Harvard poll. So there's a poll with the name Harvard in it. And by the way, I think it's a really good poll because Penn, you know, who used to be the Clinton's pollster, is an old style Democrat.
Yeah,
and,
right.
I think he asks interesting questions. And but I don't know why it's the New York Times Siena poll. It used to be New York Times CBS. It was kind of like the Tiffany Network and the New York Times.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
But Mark Penn, as persuasive as he is, if you want to hear him, you got to go to Fox.
Well, you do. That's where old style Democrats are.
Yeah.
Doug Schoen is there. And, the late Pat Caddell was there.
Pat Caddell.
They went.
Yeah. All right.
Stay current on the threat posed by China with our friends at Committee on the Present Danger China. Go to presentdangerchina.org. presentdangerchina.org.
Well, that does it for today's show. To catch up on previous episodes of the show, go to thebillbennettshow.com. You can follow me on Twitter at William J. Bennett. And you can like me on Facebook. Just search Bill Bennett. Feel free to email the show. I'd love to hear from you. It's BillBennettPodcast@gmail.com. Please share the podcast with your family and friends. We'll catch up next week.